welcome to Sans Way. It is great to start off this podcast and start this series with you. I know that some of you guys have seen my updates on Instagram throughout the last couple weeks. And honestly, the planning of this has been going on much longer, for roughly 2.5 months, maybe up until 3 months. I think it was back in even February and March I was planning this. But we are finally here. Sans Way has launched and we are on the way. And we're starting our first series, like I had just said. We're going to start with the How to Train Your Dragon trilogy. Specifically for episode one, right now we're starting with the first movie and also the first part of our format, which is story. So starting off, I want to give you guys just a bit of a story overview, not the movie overview quite yet, but just the actual story overview and how this idea came to be. And it's kind of a shock maybe for some of you who didn't know before, and honestly, I didn't know this before either, but How to Train Your Dragon didn't just start out as a idea and going into the developmental process and the pre-production process of filmmaking. It actually was a book series before, and the idea was taken and then shaped and expanded into a movie. Now, the whole idea came from Cressida Cowell, and Cowell is a British author, and she wrote quite a few books in this series. So I did some research, and I found that there are actually 12 primary books in the series. It looks like they're chronological, but there are a total of 22 works in the entire series. Now, these other 10 books are probably just maybe filler works. They're probably loosely connected to the story from the glance that I read a little bit about them. They could be filler works or just more mini stories that are included. Now, some of you may be thinking, how closely does the movie follow the books? How well did they translate this original idea? Did they expand on it at all? What happened with it? So I actually found an interview on YouTube. It's on the Peacock Kids YouTube channel. If you guys want to check it out, it's just about a minute or so long. And I don't know if it was DreamWorks or maybe a team from DreamWorks or some other network that was interviewing her. This interview was from 14 years ago, so this was during the time of the release of this first movie. And they were basically just asking her, how did the directors and writers take her idea? And like I just said, did they expand it at all? Did they change anything major? What happened? And she actually said in this interview that they kept the overall story that she had written, at least in this first book of hers in the series. They just expanded it. So they expanded the story a little bit. They gave it some more depth, a little bit more backstory. And then they also gave the characters a little more depth. Also, I wanted to point out that Astrid, I don't think I saw her included in the books. There was a place where they listed out the characters while I was researching, and I didn't see Astrid listed. So I think DreamWorks or just the directors and the writers put Astrid in there from what I could see. I could be wrong, but from the look that I gave, I didn't really see too much or really a mention of Astrid. So that was really just the major change that I saw. But otherwise, it looks like the idea was kept from Cowell all the way up into DreamWorks, and there was just a little bit of expansion. Next, I wanted to kind of discuss some similar stories that go along with this particular story, but like the genre and, you know, how dragons are usually looked at and used in stories. You know, most of us have seen movies with dragons in them, whether they are plot centered or most of them playing a background or supporting role. But typically we see dragons in the fantasy and adventure genre. And honestly, off the top of my head, I can't think of a movie I've seen with dragons that were in a different genre. So hopefully I'm right about that. And it's just not something very obvious that's sticking out. But yeah. So a couple examples I just wanted to pull up are, you know, some more well-known ones, some famous ones. A couple that, I didn't really know existed before, but we're going to see like how many of you kind of know or don't know. So of course we have Sleeping Beauty. The dragon is playing more of a supporting or background role. We have Pete's Dragon, which was back in the late 70s. Honestly, I didn't know this was a thing, and I guess Disney created it, but I never knew of it. And I watch movies back from the early 80s, and I usually don't go to the 70s, but it depends on the movie. But I've never seen it, and yeah, I'm just not very familiar with it. But next we have Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series, and of course we have Smaug in there. And I think that like the dragon species is, I don't want to say common, but it's used in the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series. I just can't remember any other dragon besides Smaug. It's been a while since I've watched this series as well. But maybe some of you know Dragonheart, our next one. It sounds familiar to me, but really what pulled me into this while I was researching was this was the first movie I saw with a alliance slash like friendship between the main character and a dragon. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Dragonheart may be a book as well, now that I think about it. Maybe that's why it's familiar to me. Maybe some of you know, it might be a book and it might have been turned into a movie. I'm not sure. Anyway, we have Dungeons and Dragons as well, which is pretty obvious with the supporting role. I've never actually seen the movie. I know of the game and everything, but never seen the movie, and I think it may be a series as well, but of course there's going to be dragons in there. And then we have more films, more well-known films like Mulan, of course, Disney, and the Harry Potter series, which, you know what, I've actually seen, or I've actually only seen a dragon or dragons represented in the fourth movie, The Goblet of Fire, during the Goblet of Fire tournament when they were doing those like tests and trials and stuff for the tournament. It may have been like the third or fourth stage where they introduced the dragons and they had to like find that golden egg or whatever it was. But I haven't watched that specific, The Goblet of Fire probably in a couple months, maybe several months. I'm not sure. Trying to remember it the best I can. But compared to, these movies, How to Train Your Dragon is different. And I started noticing that as soon as I was researching. And it's different because I like how it doesn't trip over itself with technical and mythical jargon and backstory. It stays pretty focused on just a simple story. And I know that's what animation usually focuses on. There's not a lot of backstory, put in there for the sake of a younger audience not to remember so many, or not to, have to be burdened in remembering so many details that, honestly aren't that necessary. You can have a great story and, not a crazy ton of backstory. Sure, it might make it more interesting, but for the sake of animation, like, I guess family film wise, because like anybody can watch these films. But I think that's, what I like about it and what they've done well with this. Now, as we go into the story summary, I just wanted to make a disclaimer that there will be spoilers throughout this episode. There will be spoilers throughout this series. I've planned this in a way where I feel like most people have actually watched this, and there may be some or some not. So if you haven't, I'd encourage you to go watch it. I know that there's streaming services out there that have it listed now. You may have to rent or buy it, but I know that they have it on there currently. So again, I just encourage you to watch it. For those who know, I know that you know the story summary, but for the ones that may have forgot or have watched it before, but just, it's been a while, I'm gonna give you just a little bit of a summary. Long ago, up north on the island of Burk, the young Viking Hiccup wants to join his town's fight against the dragons that continually raid them. However, his macho father and village leader, Stoic the Vast, will not allow his small, clumsy, but inventive son to do so. Regardless, Hiccup ventures out into battle and downs a mysterious Night Fury dragon with his invention. but can't bring himself to kill it. Instead, Hiccup and the dragon, whom he dubs Toothless, begin a friendship that would open up both their worlds as the observant boy learns that his people have misjudged the species. But even as the two each take flight in their own way, they find that they must fight the destructive ignorance plaguing their world. And so I just took that, that short summary right off of IMDb, the International Movies Database website. And that was by Kenneth Chisholm, just to credit him. Kind of what we missed, though, in the summary, like character-wise, we have supporting and secondary characters that do very well in this movie. So those who were not really mentioned, we have Astrid, who is the love interest. And then we have Snotlout, Fishlegs, Roughnut, and Toughnut. These are the funniest names, who are essentially the cool kids, the cool like high school kids of this film, which is just hilarious. The dialogue is excellent for just how they fight with each other. Gobber, who is the friend and supporting character that has that like comedic charm, especially for a family film, is great because we love the spontaneous moments of just like the comedy coming out and everything. It's just, you know, you always need that character. Those are always appreciated. So Gobber is great. And then of course we have Stoic, like who I previously mentioned, in the summary. And Stoic is the typical dad, you know, he doesn't really like his son's personality, I guess that kind of sounded bad. He's the typical dad where I don't think he understands his son's personality. I feel like there's sometimes like dads don't understand their son's personality sometimes. I'm trying to say that in a better way, but specifically for this film, he doesn't really understand his son's personality. He doesn't understand Hiccup's personality, and maybe his physical differences. Of course, you know, we all know that Hiccup is scrawny, he's stick-like, he's skinny, doesn't have any muscle on him. But mentally, you know, he's got a wide skill set. He's strategic, great at planning, very inventive. We've seen his inventions in this first film, and just a great skill set to have. Now, honestly, after watching the movie, I do understand why Stoic feels the way he feels, because, you know, during the beginning, it seems like Hiccup isn't necessarily like joking around with, you know, fighting dragons and everything, and just like the actual seriousness that goes along with it. And I think, you know, Stoic knows this. For one, he knows that it's the chief's responsibility to protect everyone, and Hiccup is going to assume that role at some point in his life. But two is he knows that if Hiccup does treat this as a game, and doesn't acknowledge how, you know, threatening, how this threat is at that high of a level, it could have fatal consequences for him, for Stoic, and, you know, the complete rest of the congregation. So I agree with Stoic. I think it's just the way you show it, though, sometimes too. Now, as we go into, you know, my specific likes when I broke down this first movie and the story, I feel like this is more frequent in TV shows than movies, just because movies have a lack of time and less time for character arcs and development. You know, they really have to squeeze it in there, unlike TV shows where you can run seasons and seasons on top of each other and developing it, but just, you know, making more time and more space. But I like when they do the whole cool kids thing. And that's exactly what they do here with the gang that we have. Snotlout, Fishlegs, and then the twins Rough and Toughnut. And the cool kids vibe is totally there, but they're not actually like the cool kids. I feel like they just kind of claim to be, because they're just like those young teenage Vikings who kind of do whatever they want. But like I mentioned previously, like the dialogue is hilarious. But when you mix that in, when you have a character who's disliked literally by everyone, including the congregation, which we're not really shown that, but by this group, that creates an underdog story. And everybody loves an underdog story, but I think like that's where they blend well. You know, you still have that cool kid aspect, but you have, you know, those cool kids attacking a weaker or just disliked character. Now, for example, Hiccup brings down the Night Fury. He brings down Toothless, and a monstrous nightmare goes after him right after that, and Stoic has to go down and save him. But Snotlout and Roughnut then comment, "Oh, that was quite a performance, and I've never seen somebody mess up that bad." And it's like, sure, they're both being jerks at this point, but it's pretty funny. And there are so many more lines like that, not even directed towards Hiccup, just them fighting with each other, but it's hilarious. It's pretty funny. Second, I want to move on to Astrid and just talk about her as a character. And again, I'll talk more about her and Hiccup and down characters like that. So I hope you guys enjoy that as well. But I like how they balanced Astrid. And what I mean by balancing her is she's not a damsel in distress, but she doesn't have over masculine traits. So starting out with damsel in distress, she's not like, in this case, just like a regular girl or even just a Viking girl or whatever, or even a princess, because that would make sense for Viking wise too. But typically in older films and modern ones today, because they're both using like that same story that originated and it was older. But damsel in distress, it's all about, finding the princess or fighting for the princess or fighting for the girl or, that type of thing. But with Astrid, they balanced her well. And so she's independent, but the story is not being treated in a way where they have to save her, or they have to go after her, or whatever. However, she doesn't have over masculine traits. So although she is in a Viking society, she's not acting like the rest of the idiots. She's not acting like the rest of the guys. Like I said before, Astrid is very strategic. She's similar to Hiccup in the mentality way. So she's very strategic. She plans out very well. She's prepared for things. It seems like with her fighting techniques and just throughout the movie we see during the dragon training, she just does super well. Her movements are crisp. She's actually a pretty good fighter. She's got all these good physical and mental qualities as well. So I really like how they balanced Astrid. She's got like a tough outer shell throughout the first third and first half of the movie, but she deeper down, she does have a good personality. And an example is, at the beginning when Snotlout and Roughnut, which I hope, gosh darn, I hope that's the right one of the twins. I get them mixed up so much, Roughnut and Toughnut. But Snotlout and Roughnut were teasing Hiccup, and Astrid was there. This was towards the beginning with that beginning raid. And she was there and she heard everything. And, honestly, she could have said something to Hiccup or something about him, but she didn't. And she even kind of looked sad. She was by them, she was sitting next to them, but she was kind of distanced. But she looked kind of sad. And even when she was like looking at him leave, he was sent back to the house. But she was sad, not in a disappointed way, but, and this is me theorizing a little bit. But I think, growing up, think if we thought back earlier, if she's growing up with Hiccup, obviously she knew that he was different physically. But again, he's very smart, he's inventive, and he's empathetic. And I think he's empathetic, and that helps out because of what he lacks physically. I don't just mean that by he's a very intelligent guy, and that's it. I think that he just knows how to deal with people and how to talk with people because he suffers physically as well. So, but just by that, I think that's why, she looks sad. In that moment. But I also think that she just knows the potential that he has. She knows that he's not like a typical Viking. But she knows that there's something different about him and there's something good that's different about him. And not necessarily, later when we get into the movie and how Toothless and him are and everything and their development together. She doesn't necessarily know that, but I think she does know that he has something else to offer and he has more potential because he's not that traditional Viking. Third, and I know this is, you know, kind of one, this one has to be here in order for it to be a good family and just all around movie. But the comedy, there were so many great moments in this movie from all the characters. And I know I've put some examples out there before, but all of the characters had such great moments. You know, Snotlout and the twins, of course, Hiccup with, you know, he had a lot of sarcasm in the movie that was good, and it paired well with especially his banter with Gobber. And even Stoic had some really funny moments. Specifically Gobber, you know, back in the first half, as I said, he's the supporting and comedic character. He has some very funny lines. For example, Stoic and him were talking about Hiccup not being a typical Viking. And Stoic says something like, I take him hunting or fishing, and he goes looking for trolls. And of course, you know, Gobber pops in. He's like, what? Trolls exist? He said, they steal your socks, but only the left ones. You know, what's with that? And he says this in such a funny way where he's actually, you know, he's 100% serious. He's 100% serious, and he's saying like, oh my gosh, you know, trolls certainly exist, but just because he's missing a certain sock. But he also, like, right after this, he's like pondering so hard about, you know, why they only go for the left ones. And that was brilliant. And then there's also a moment with Stoic later in the movie, where he finds out that Hiccup is a, you know, quote unquote, great dragon warrior. And, you know, he has finally shown his late bloomness of Vikingness, you know, back when he gets back from the first hunt to the nest. And he literally says right in front of his son, you know, all those years of the worst Viking Burke's ever seen. Odin, it was rough. I almost gave up on you, and all of the while you were holding out on me, you know. And he said it with more enthusiasm, of course, but just this scene is hilarious. And I really like how we're able to see the more humorous side of Stoic. That was a really good piece, the softer side. And lastly, I know, you know, I kind of hinted at this before, but I really like how this movie includes several genres. And I don't necessarily want to say, like, several genres, like that terminology, but it's like a mixture of a bunch of different characteristics, but it works. You know, there's comedy, there's adventure, there's romance, there's fantasy, there's action. You've got all these great, you know, what are essentially genres, but they're characteristics, and they come together so well. And, you know, I think that's just what makes an overall story, is you have these, you know, five plus, because there's more, but you have these characteristics in there that make a good story. If you piece them right, and if you put them in different parts and throughout the movie, and you balance them well, it can make it really, really good. You know, but I'm not saying that you can't have just a good comedy movie, or just a good adventure movie, or just a good fantasy, romance, or action movie, because there's plenty of those. But these characteristics are so crucial, I think, to a good overall story, because we as humans relate to them so much. You know, I'd say at least 65% of us and up relate with those because we've experienced them in real life. Doesn't matter, you know, really how old we are. I guess, you know, of course not like a child really, but, you know, upwards of that, sure. So I want to go to specifics, you know, the parts and the moments now. And, you know, sometimes I feel weird when I talk about movies or shows and how they're built on moments. And you know what? I was just thinking about this before I started recording, and I started thinking about that this week. And there are so many different moments in TV shows and movies that, you know, I really, really enjoy. And, you know, I'll think back to a particular part and in a movie and acknowledge how good it was. And I don't want to take away from the original story, though. However, I would say that these are the main parts / turning points of the story here that I'll mention specifically for How to Train Your Dragon in this first movie. Some, if not all of these, listed will be discussed in greater detail in the following episodes, such as production, which will be the following episode, and maybe the characters episode as well for particular scenes. First, we're going to start out with the first encounter. It's the first encounter between, you know, Toothless and Hiccup. And this moment is so powerful because, of course, you know, this sets up the remainder of the story, literally. But it also immediately debunks Stoic's extensive knowledge on dragons and their only violent behavior, because that's, you know, what he thinks, that's what the congregation thinks, that's what everybody else thinks, and even, you know, what Hiccup was taught to think. So, you know, Hiccup, you know, he ends up freeing Toothless. He couldn't bear to kill a dragon. And of course, Toothless pounces on him. He's not domestic yet. So he pounces on him, growls, but he then flies away. And this was like a powerful growl. I mean, if you've seen it, it's kind of crazy, but he doesn't kill him or harm him. And so again, this sets up the remainder of the story and shows, you know, is exposing those cracks, like, oh my gosh, it's not actually how it was said to be. Another one is the dragon training / forbidden friendship. And there's a slash in between there just because this was a montage between it and it kind of switched back and forth. But returning to the summary for a second, Stoic doesn't allow Hiccup to fight due to his size and his past experiences with trying, but he ends up letting him begin training. And Gobber actually convinced him of that. But during this time, Hiccup is getting closer to Toothless during that montage that is combined with dragon training, the first one. And I think there was a couple more scenes, two or three more with dragon training. And in the beginning, the relationship and the development is slow, but in time they start to develop a trustful relationship. And, you know, like I said, dragon training mixes in with the scene. And the score was the portion of the score was dubbed Forbidden Friendship for this scene, which I think was a perfect name for it. Hiccup is learning a lot about dragons through Toothless, so that's why he's doing so well in the training. He applies this knowledge to it in a nonviolent way of defeating, you know, quote, defeating the dragons, but it's really just incapacitating them. And then we go into a beautiful montage of Toothless curiosity with Hiccup. So it goes through the whole scene, you know, during the kind of the climax of Forbidden Friendship. And it's Hiccup drawing a picture of Toothless and then Toothless trying to do the same thing to Hiccup. And that's really cool, like for like relatable reasons between animals and humans, which, you know, was just a moment right there. But this is also when we see Hiccup touch Toothless for the first time. And this is really the true turning point of the movie. You know, some people would argue, well, maybe it's just the first encounter and how we didn't kill him at first. And, you know, I agree with that to a certain extent, but this has never, ever happened, or except for Stoic, you know, freaking punching a dragon in the nose or the head, or just like headlocking one or whatever. This is like the first time we see peace here, which is monumental. It's crazy. And it's a turning point and pivotal. And it shows us that just about everything he's been told about dragons is wrong. Completely wrong. Next is the successful flight. And just a little bit of background information. Astrid is actually livid at this point. She's going through dragon training with Hiccup. And, you know, Hiccup's been dominating because of the skills that he's been using from spending more time with Toothless. So she's livid. And she knows he's been, you know, not doing traditional Viking training with them. He's been sneaking off, and that's when he's been meeting Toothless and essentially training with him. That's kind of what's happening. But the successful flight scene presents itself after the montage. And, Hiccup and Toothless have been training. They haven't actually flown together, like full-on flown. The flight went extremely well. It was going extremely well towards the beginning. Everything was working as planned. You know, he's flying with Toothless. They're doing all these maneuvers. Everything's going great. But they get to the point where they're flying at like a direct 90-degree angle straight up. And then they start to get tangled, and he loses the clip that he's clipped to the saddle of Toothless, and they're rushing towards the ground, and eventually he's able to get Toothless in midair and pull him back up and everything. And I'm not doing justice for the score at this moment because it was amazing. And yes, they did almost die at this moment. It was crazy. And he had a cheat sheet that had all the maneuvers that he was going to do with the tail, and all like the it was almost like a gauge shifter that he kind of used with it. But the ending was crazy. They were doing all these maneuvers around the rocks. They almost died. But this was amazing because it was building trust between them. It was another opportunity for them to build trust and get closer, and so on. So, we're progressing throughout the movie. Next, we have The Romantic Flight, and like I talked about it a little bit before, Astrid was pretty mad. I mean, she was steaming at this portion of the movie. About halfway, a little after halfway, she knew that Hiccup didn't have anything close to the physical capability to get that good. So she thought, he was trying something else, which was correct, whether it be illegal or just something really, really weird, or I don't even know, but it was correct. So he ends up winning this final like dragon training battle against Astrid, and that determines on who's able to face like the not the final dragon, but they're the one who's chosen to kill a dragon in front of the whole congregation. And Astrid really wanted that because she wanted to impress people, and I can't even blame her. Now, I did stumble. I was theorizing a little bit about it, just like how Astrid was acting at this moment. And we never really saw her parents. And so this is why I had a theory about it, is that I wonder if Astrid's parents were like perfectionist, and they were really striving to be the best, either family-wise or just for their daughter, or whatever. So maybe that's why Astrid had such aggression, and she was so ambitious. That was kind of built into her personality. And I'll save more of that for the character episode, of course, because I can talk more about that in that specific episode, what it's going to be used for. But that's just a little bit of theorizing I have. Hiccup then, when he finds out, he tries to leave Berk, but Astrid is there. She finds out where he's hiding and where he's been doing everything. Things go from bad to worse. She spots Toothless. He flies up with her and Hiccup, because he can't let her go back to the village and tell everybody. So they fly, and she gets on Toothless, and it's not until she apologizes, because she's angry at this point, like she's steaming hard. It's not until she actually apologizes. Toothless is supposed to just take them down and fly him and everything. He goes through all these different maneuvers, and yeah, it's not until she actually apologizes that, we actually were taken into the romantic flight, which is the scene that spans afterwards. And this is an awesome scene. I was honestly just really happy for Hiccup, just because during this time he finally won over Astrid. The romantic flight was just a great scene. Production was great, and the story needed it. We really need to see kind of not like the climax of their relationship, because it wasn't, but it was like the true start. So it was a great scene. The score was great. And then lastly, Hiccup and Stoic, with the final test, that final kind of killing the dragon in front of the whole congregation. He's in front of Stoic. So Stoic at this point, he still doesn't know that, this is literally the complete opposite of what Hiccup is, and what he's going to do. And things get really bad. He gets in there, but then he immediately refuses to fight. He tries to show them how dragons actually are, and it goes from bad to worse. Toothless comes and he has to rescue them. End up capturing Toothless, and they take him. They're going to lead him to the nest, or they're going to use him to lead them to the nest. But at this point, Stoic basically disowns Hiccup, and this was a pretty heartbreaking scene. We see that. I don't want to say that Stoic was necessarily he was delusional at this point, but oh my gosh, could you even imagine what you would think? Like, if your son or your daughter or child or friend or whoever, like, you think that they're lying to you horribly, and it's just a huge, huge misunderstanding. And it's almost like betrayal. And it kind of was in that moment to him, when it truly wasn't. But yeah, he essentially disowns Hiccup. And it was a crazy, crazy scene. And then afterwards, Stoic and the congregation, they find the nest with Toothless help. Meanwhile, Astrid does talk with Hiccup about what happened. And honestly, I think she was digging at this moment. I think she really wanted to know, like, what type of person Hiccup was. And I don't really blame her for doing that, because she wants to know, like, who he is, who, what his character is, and why he did exactly what he did with Toothless, because we know no other Viking would have done that. And not even Astrid, because Astrid had to have been convinced by Hiccup for this thing to even happen. So the two of them gather up the rest of the gang, though, afterwards, though, and take the other dragons to the nest. And then we have the final rescue mission. Stoic finds the nest, but he just completely misjudges what he's up against. This is when we finally see the alpha. I believe, I think it was a she. I think I could be wrong. I thought it was a she called the Red Death. And we see that it was, like, essentially a beehive, and that's what Astrid even said. It was a beehive, kind of like a control system, where, or like a hierarchy, where the alpha controls the rest of the dragons. That's why they were raiding Burke and everything. So, but yeah, everything hits the fan. The congregation is going wild during this final battle, and Hiccup and Astrid arrive with the rest of the gang, and everyone's just literally battling it out. And then to just, kind of cut through a little bit, summarize the ending. Stoic saves Toothless. Stoic apologizes to Hiccup. Hiccup creates a plan to take down the Alpha. They basically just shot out the wings. And then they went through this whole, like, flying battle sequence, and then they both plummeted towards the ground. And I think that's what he was trying to do. But now that I think about it, and even when I watched it before, I was like, man, where were you going with this? It's like he was trying to sacrifice himself. And that could have been it as well. But it was a crazy fight sequence, though. Great production. But yes, they end up killing the Red Death. And Toothless does save Hiccup at the end. Burke is safe. Everything's fine. Now, Hiccup and everyone that go back home. But he is missing his right foot. And so, that's kind of the correlation between, Hiccup missing his right foot now, and, Toothless having part of his room, having part of his wing cut off. That's the main correlation between that. And I kind of like how they did that. I see, definitely where that fits into the story. So, closing thoughts. What's the point? What's the point of the story, and what makes this specifically a good story? What makes How to Train Your Dragon, at least the first one, a good story? And so I did some research, and I found six elements of a good story. The first one I see here is a natural arc from beginning to the end of the story. And there was, we had a natural arc, and our climax in the middle and everything. And so that was true, and the story did maintain steady momentum, especially through the dragon training. And then of course, we get up to our climax, forbidden friendship, plus the successful flight. You could kind of consider it the romantic flight as well. That's probably like the big three, that mix to make the climax. But all of that was well. Another one is a clear narrative voice. I think this may be for literature. I think this could apply for stories, just, I mean, movies, books, whatever. What I thought of was, like, the voiceover that we have for Hiccup at the beginning and the end. I mean, it was a clear narrative voice, but it wasn't a narrative voice throughout the story. So it applies, but I don't think it applies specifically to this. Then we get a sense of genre, and, like I already talked about, we have all those characteristics, we have all those genres mixing to this story. But again, it's more of you know, an adventure and fantasy-based film. But we still have those characteristics of the other genres, you know, comedy, romance, action, adventure, and so on, the ones that I listed. So that was great. There's no problem with that. Compelling characters. I've already explained, you know, our cool kids and our everything, and Stoic and Gobber and our other supporting cast, and having Astrid as the love interest was, you know, just a good addition to it. A structured storyline, which is next. Of course, we had that. Even Cowell, Cressida Cowell had that with her books, but specifically, you know, looking at the movie, we did have a very structured storyline, and I see that. And then an insightful theme. So what I wanted to mention with the themes is, sure, this is a coming to age film. This is kind of like, I don't know how to name it traditionally, but with associated with a certain terminology, but it's kind of like going against the grain, going against the current. You know, Hiccup finds something, and he's not necessarily skeptical, but he, you know, just from the very beginning, he is not like all the other Vikings, and he seeks something out, he finds it, and then he finds out that it's different. But not only does he find out it's different, because sure, that's important, but it's what he does when he knows something is different, or he knows something is, you know, not what it seems. So if that's a theme, I can't explain it into shorter words, but that's what I've got. But yeah, certainly coming to age film. And then just, I guess, a theme of friendship, a theme of, a theme of friendship, that would probably work. But that's what I've got. So overall, you know, you guys will know this more about me. I have a grading scale. So my movie and TV show scale, it's my media scale, but I typically have a tougher one. And it's just because I like to take it seriously and everything. So I'm probably never going to give anything a 10, but I'm never going to give anything a 1. So let me go ahead and pull up the IMDb score for us real quick and see, because I think it got like a 7.7 or a 7.8. Let me just pull it up real quick. Oh, okay. So, you know, maybe there were some more reviews. Maybe that those other reviews I read for the next two movies of the trilogy, it got an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb currently. I don't know if, you know, they can update the votes or the ratings, but wow, it did, you know, bet it got in that 8 range. And what I always say, you know, when I look at IMDb is anything better than a 7 is good. Anything better than a 7.5 is typically very, very good. But anything over a 8 is, I would say, at least for their grading scale, is amazing. You know, anything over an 8 is something to be extremely, extremely proud of. So having an 8.1 out of 10 right now is really, really good. Now, going to my grading scale, from what I've talked about and, you know, what I've thought about even longer than just what I've organized so far, at least for this episode, I would say I've hovered between like an 8.3 and an 8.4, and I was actually pretty close to that. A 9 is very, very strong to me. I mean, I don't give a lot of 9s to a lot of stuff, but especially TV shows, I mean, both TV shows and movies, but a 9 is very strong to me, and I think anything over an 8 is fabulous, because I only want to have a couple of 10s, and I only want to have a couple of 9s. I only want to have like 2 or 3 10s and like a couple of 9s, because I just want to take it seriously, and I want to, you know, take everything in before I grade it, and, you know, see why they did things these ways, and of course, what I think of it, you know, my opinion based and everything. So I hover between an 8.3 and an 8.4, and that's extremely good for my scale. Like I said, some of you guys are probably thinking right now, oh my gosh, you only gave it an 8.3 or an 8.4. It's because my scale is very, very tough. But that's good for me. Like I said, anything over a 7, I'm kind of like IMDb. Anything over a 7 is good. Anything over an 8 is great. So that's where it's going to hover in between. Thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed the content. Remember to follow or subscribe on whichever streaming or podcast platform you're listening on. Again, go to Sans Way on Instagram to get all the updates and notifications and more information about the podcast. And I will see you in the next one.